Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we want to turn now to the 2020 presidential campaign trail, because for the first time, former Vice President Joe Biden called for impeachment and addressed the unfounded claims about his son's business ties to Ukraine. Ed O'Keefe is covering the Biden campaign tonight in New Hampshire.
To preserve our Constitution, our democracy, our basic integrity, he should be impeached.
After hedging on impeachment for weeks, Joe Biden ripped into President Trump today, calling him a threat to every American.
We all laughed when he said he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and get away with it. It's no joke. He's shooting holes in the Constitution. And we cannot let him get away with it.
The president responded during Biden's speech, tweeting, Joe's failing campaign gave him no other choice.
You know, he didn't say that until right now, and he sees what's happening to him. I guess he's no longer the front runner.
Paul Violas is a CBS News security consultant, an accomplished author, and a renowned global security and law enforcement expert. With over 35 years of experience, he's dedicated his life to finding solutions for the problems that keep you up at night. This is Security Matters with Paul Violas.
Welcome to Security Matters, where your security matters most. I'm Paul Violas, and this is a CBS News radio production. A big thanks to everybody hitting us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Today's show is a direct reflection of how you have such an impact of the content of this show because of the amount of people writing in questions about which is the whole subject of our show today, impeachment. Is the president getting impeached? Should he get impeached? What does the law say? What is this comment about civil war? I understand, and believe me when I say I understand the anxiety that goes through a lot of this. And, you know, in pure Security Matters fashion, we have reached out to someone that not just I, but all of CBS and so many people around the country, you know, consider as a pure, and a pure, true subject matter expert. I'm talking about a renowned legal scholar, law professor, author, Rhodes Scholar nominee, and CBS News radio legal analyst, Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Paul, always.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thane, I want to jump right into this. My position, as we hear this, right, I'm not looking on the right side of the aisle, the left side of the aisle. I think, you know, we're Americans. We're about advanced citizenship. We can take the truth. We just need to know what it is. So, which is why we're so fortunate to have someone of your caliber and character here to guide us through this process. It's a frightening process. So let me start by benchmarking the subject so we can all put our arms around it. What are the true material elements of impeachment? What is impeachment?
Well, remember, Paul, impeachment is a political process. It's not a legal one. This is not a legal proceeding, which is why it was interesting when President Trump last week said that he had a constitutional right to examine the whistleblower, to confront him, as if this was a Sixth Amendment issue. Well, this is just not a legal proceeding. So that the element there is missing. This is a political trial. If it becomes a trial, this is really just a political process for now.
Got it.
In our system, Congress is given the responsibility to decide whether there are grounds for an impeachment. And impeachment is really like in criminal law would be an indictment, right? Like a grand jury indicting the president and then moving forward for trial.
Okay.
So the House deals with impeachment. The Senate deals with the actual trial itself, which is why in our country We've had actual two presidents who've been impeached, but they were not removed from office because that's the Senate's job. That's what the trial is. So, for instance, President Andrew Johnson and President Clinton were both impeached by the Congress, but they were acquitted by the Senate, and therefore they remained in office. So that explains part of it. The other part of it is the elements. If this isn't a criminal trial, that means that the criminal offenses or prosecutorial offenses are not really relevant here. You don't actually have to commit crimes in order to be impeached.
So, Thane, let me ask you, what we keep hearing on the radio and we keep seeing on television is he's committed high crimes. Forgive my ignorance, Thane, but what does that mean?
Nobody knows.
Oh,
Paul, you're an excellent company, Paul. Like so much of our founding fathers, in their wisdom, they never told us what they meant. You know, so this is why, this is what constitutional law is about. This is why every year people find it maddening what they hear from the Supreme Court, because they're saying, where do you get this stuff? And the reason is because the Constitution is deliberately vague. It's just a kind of a benchmark for us, rulings, future rulings, based on, you know, where we are as a country at the time. So high crimes and misdemeanors has never been defined. By the way, it's also bribery, treason, and high crimes and misdemeanors, right?
Bribery? Okay, so I because I'm going to learn a lot today, so I'm going to take some notes. Bribery, treason.
Treason. And then you get to high crimes and misdemeanors. So, for instance, we have never impeached any federal official for treason. That's never happened. We've impeached people for bribery. Again, impeachment is a process for federal officials, so it doesn't have to be president. It can be a federal judge. So we've impeached over the years federal judges for bribery. So that's happened.
Okay.
And again, when it came to Presidents Clinton and Johnson, we didn't impeach them for treason either. We really impeached them for what you see here more, abuses of power, or breach of the public trust, which is sort of what we'll talk about in a moment when we discuss what are these high crimes and misdemeanors. So you could make the argument that in this case, extortion, which is what maybe took place with the Ukrainian president, falls into the category of bribery. But technically speaking, this is going to fall into the category, as you would say, Paul, the unknowable category of high crimes and misdemeanors. And so, again, if it's not criminal, the question, what is it? So the way it's usually interpreted is, you know, abuses of power, breaches or violations of the public trust, behavior that might be called grossly incompatible with the proper functioning of the presidency, right? The dignity of the office, and also power that's being used for personal gain. So those are roughly the categories that the Congress will have to think about, right? Generally, abuse of power, behavior that's incompatible with the proper functioning of the office, and power used for personal gain. This comes to us, again, not from the Constitution. This comes from the Federalist Papers and Alexander Hamilton. So this is kind of an aside that Hamilton gave us to sort of give us a better sense of how to guide ourselves with, if we're ever faced with an impeachment. So those standards, violation of public trust, or broad criminality in breaking the law. Again, you don't have to break the law in order to be impeached, but obviously Alexander Hamilton said if you did break the law, that could also be a cause, grounds for impeachment. So that's why we're in that vague category, but I just sort of laid out a little of what you could look at as saying this is what would constitute high crimes and misdemeanors.
So this really speaks volumes then as to what we're seeing unfold, Thane, because as you just so eloquently put it, it's highly subjective and it's in the eyes of a political process, not a legal process.
Exactly.
So
we don't even know. Yeah, go ahead.
No, so if I'm understanding this correctly, then so we have Congress, so we have members of the House that want to move for impeachment for whatever reason. I'm keeping politics out of this. But so you have members of the House that want to move towards impeachment because they feel that the president's behavior, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm struggling like so many Americans to figure this out, Thane. If if I'm understanding this correctly, members of the House are moving towards impeachment because they feel that the president's actions on the telephone call with the Ukrainian president violated one aspect of the definition of impeachment in their eyes.
That's right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. I mean, this is why this is a complicated case, because the question is, does the phone call with a foreign dignitary, a fellow president, in which this, the contents that we know took place, does that represent an impeachable offense, right? Now, your show, because of what is the nature of your show about national security, one then raises the question, was the president on this call conducting foreign policy in a way that undermined national security by trying to leverage or extort from another president from another country a favor that he wanted in order to carry out a political vendetta against a political rival? That's clearly what the House Democrats are going to say, right? That he was leveraging his office. That would mean the abuse of power, leveraging his office in order to conduct foreign policy in such a way as to carry out a vendetta against a political rival, and in doing so, encouraging or enabling a federal government, another foreign government, to interfere with our elections, our political process, which again is a national security question, right?
Correct.
That that another two countries, at least one country, maybe now maybe China as well, has been invited, right, by the president to engage in interference with our political process. And does that undermine our national security? Because remember, this is the president of the United States. He's responsible for the defense of the homeland. That's his job.
Right.
And instead of doing that, he contacted a foreign leader for the purposes of engaging and in doing so, extorting a promise that says, I am withholding foreign aid that Congress has already allocated to you. And as the president, I'm not in the business of handling the purse. The purse in the United States is handled by Congress. They have the power of allocation of military aid. I'm going to withhold the money that Congress has already allocated, designated for you, until you provide this favor.
So two questions.
That's the case.
So two questions, Stan. Two questions. I know I'm going to have more. One, if you would, can you define extortion for us? Because I think that's really important for everyone to understand as we hear this. What is extortion? And two, does the president, and again, everyone, we're talking to a true legal scholar here, Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, does the president have the ability, the power, to hold up those funds that Congress has already authorized?
Well, let me take the second question. I mean, it may have been throughout American history that presidents did something like this, right, where money that was allocated by Congress, which is their responsibility, was for other political or diplomatic or foreign policy considerations. Because you can imagine a president saying, yes, I know that you've allocated the funds, but I'm in charge of foreign policy, you're not, and I need to be able to use this as a leveraging tool in order to conduct foreign policy. And by the way, if it wasn't for the purposes of investigating a political rival, right, President Trump would be in a very different position. If it was for something else, that I really needed them for some other purpose.
So basically, the leverage we're talking about is not bad. We're talking, it's the manner in which it's being leveraged.
Right, because think about it. You know, you think about the ongoing issues about the southern border, right? The only time President Trump seems to win in court, and he has several times in connection with his immigration initiatives, is when he frames it in terms of national security. That's Paul's show. That's what you're all about, right? That's the only time the president wins. He wins. He's won in front of the Supreme Court. He wins only when he frames it in terms of national security. or in terms of national emergency. I'm the president of the United States. I'm the one that decides whether there's an emergency or not. And I have to make moves, including, remember what he did, speaking of Congress, moving money that was supposed to be allocated for the Pentagon for military purposes and reallocating it to building a wall. Remember, Congress refused to give him the money that he needed to build a wall. The president diverted funds that were going to be used to the Defense Department under a theory of national emergency and said, we're going to use the money here, right? So there's an example where the president is interfering with Congress's power of the purse, but he's invoking his powers as the leader of this nation and defending the homeland.
So he can do that.
Defending the homeland. Yes, and it
okay.
seems like this is, look, it's an ongoing legal question,
right?
This is the supremacy clause of the Constitution. I can assure you everyone's going to continue. Lawyers are going to file suit, always challenging the president's extension of his power. But the argument that the president will always make is this is my executive authority, executive privilege, because it's my job to protect the homeland.
So where does
extortion
come into this thing? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Extortion is where you force another entity to engage in activity they otherwise would not have been involved in had you not forced them with some other kind of threat or intimidation.
And so the two words, or else.
Yes, or exactly. It's something that you would otherwise not have chosen to do because there's a quid pro quo. And if you do that, I will remove this impediment that I've put in place. So that's the difference of extortion. You're not really bribing them. You're forcing them to do something they otherwise wouldn't want to do. And oftentimes it's illegal what you're asking them to do.
So then looking at the case now, right, as the information that's been presented, members of the House are saying that the president was extorting. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Thane, but this is what I'm getting from what I'm hearing. That the president, they're alleging the president, in their eyes, extorted the president of another country.
Right.
By saying, I want you to, or we want you to, I guess the transcript says we, not I, we'd like you to look into this. This meaning the former vice president's son.
Because this happened in your country, right? That's the ostensible argument, right?
Because right, it happened in your country.
I want you to investigate something that happened in Argentina. We're saying this was my political rival's son was on the board of one of the companies in your country. That's why I'm asking you.
Okay. So as I'm looking at this, we have our president, and he's saying to the president of Ukraine, you know what? I've heard some things about so-and-so's son, and I'd like you to look into that. Does he say, and I didn't read the full transcript, but does he say, if you don't do this, I'm not going to approve the funds?
He's essentially saying that, and apparently so too did Rudy Giuliani, to make the point again. That this is what it was being held, this is the Damocles sword that's held above your head, that this is something that you're expecting and something that you need. And also, Paul, this is, again, your show is dedicated to national security. This is so loaded in another way, right? Because you know that Ukraine is trying to defend itself against Russia. Oh,
exactly.
God, Putin all over again, right? We're back to that. So here's money that Congress has said the Ukrainians need in order to defend themselves against Russian incursions, and therefore it's something Congress thought was of an emergent circumstances, emergency, and it needs to be delivered when we say it's going to be delivered. The president, who we know has an ongoing relationship with President Putin, so maybe he doesn't care so much whether the Ukrainians receive this money on time, the military aid on time. And he's basically saying to the president of Ukraine, look, I know you need this money, and we promised to give you this money, but I think he did before you. There's an additional step before you receive it. And I will withhold it until such time as you perform the task that I ask.
Which really kind of brings me to that next question. I'm filled with questions for you, Thane. The next question is, How can there be such a gross disparity of interpretation of a transcript? Now, I'm guilty as charged, Thane. I am a black and white guy, you know? That's why I love the law. You read the material elements of a statute, and it tells you, did you do this? Yes. Well, right. You broke the law, right? I like that. Yeah. But this is confusing as all get out. So we have one side that's, and I know that all of our listeners here, Thane, are frustrated because you have one side going on TV saying, I read the transcript. That president hasn't done anything wrong. And then you hear the other side saying, we had to impeach him. Why is that happening? I don't understand. Where's the ambiguity?
Well, there's two things that I can think of. I'm sure there are more answers to this, Paul. But there's two things. One of which is that, you know, President Trump has rewritten all the rules on presidential conduct. So, for instance, let's compare this with the Nixon presidency. The Nixon presidency in Watergate, at the end, his downfall was a cover-up, right? He didn't want those tapes of his conversations with other of people within his administration in which he discussed the Watergate break-in to be known because it would demonstrate that he, in fact, was involved and had full knowledge of this criminal activity.
Right? Cut and dry.
And so the whole thing, right, cut and dry. It was a cover-up.
No question.
The thing about President Trump is he doesn't really cover anything up. You know, he everything is out in the open. It's all transparent. So by its sheer transparency, the way he frames it, it's a perfect call. I made a perfect call. It's confusing because normally this phone call and its contents would be covered up. He's taken a very different aggressive position. There's nothing wrong with my call. And besides which, it's consistent with what happened after the Access Hollywood tapes, right? Everyone assumed during the election, well, that's over. You know, the Access Hollywood. What the truth is that they started to use the term, the Access Hollywood tapes, and that kind of behavior is, quote, baked in with President Trump, right?
Okay.
Which means his base doesn't care. They already assume it. His base assumes he's going to get on the phone with Ukraine, and he's going to get them to spy on the Bidens. You know, he's going to put the and many Americans think there's something wrong with that.
But now, as a legal scholar, though, as you look at the allegations now, let's look at that one part of this. You're sitting in the Oval, and information's brought to you that if this is true, if the allegations against former Vice President Biden's son are true.
Exactly.
That.
Yeah.
And I know this may upset a lot of my listeners, and I'm going to apologize in advance, but I'm going to tell you,
well,
that's going to upset me more than this.
Yeah. That is what the president has been working for the last couple of days. What the press should be focused on is the criminal activity of the Bidens in Ukraine. And the actions of a vice president at a time that his son was serving as a board member of on a foreign corporation. And that's what this is about. Now, here, what's the problem here? It sounds good, except that why are you asking the Ukrainians to do this? Why aren't you asking the CIA or your own intelligence agencies? Why don't we deal with it as a true legal or political matter initiated by the United States, not asking? It looks so, you know, soiled.
Has anyone asked that question, Thane?
I don't know.
I haven't. That's the first I've heard. I think we need to get you someplace involved here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that's the question he's saying. It's a good question to say, look, the country should be more concerned about what the Bidens did, not my efforts. I was simply trying to find out what happened. I'm the president that's trying to understand what happened with this. And so, therefore, I thought I was going to the right party. I went to the president of Ukraine, and I said, hey, this happened on your soil. This is a Ukrainian issue. It involved an American and an American vice president and his son, and I want you to get to the bottom of it.
Right.
And so, therefore, that's why the president's saying it's a perfect call, and I've done nothing wrong. And that's the way the Republicans are going to frame this. That to shift the inquiry to the Bidens and not on what seems like a sordid, phone call to undermine two things. First of all, undermine Congress's power to deliver funds to the country, military aid to the country where it was designated, and to conduct foreign policy in such a way for a personal gain, right? To get a leg up on a rival.
And I'm taking so much from this conversation, as I know everybody is, Thane, but the thing that really kind of sits at the core of this entire debacle is the fact that of what you led with. I haven't let go of that yet. I mean, this is not a legal process. This is a political process, which means that it's in the eyes of the beholder as to how it's being interpreted, which makes sense now. It makes sense why we're in this position, because it's so highly... How do we have a crime like impeachment where you can remove the most powerful political person in the world from office, and it's based on subjectivity? That is just... All right, so I'll answer my last question, Shane, because I could probably ask you questions for hours. I could listen to you for hours. My last question is this. Based upon your experience, which is extensive, how do you see this ending up?
Well, that's also a good question. Remember, we don't even know at this point whether impeachment proceedings have been initiated, right? I mean, we know that Congresswoman Pelosi has begun an impeachment inquiry. But normally it was done with President Clinton, it was done with President Johnson and President Nixon. There's a resolution calling for the inquiry itself, for a formal impeachment inquiry. Congresswoman Pelosi is saying, I don't have to have that. I can just begin the process. So that's the first thing already we're saying. You can see how Republicans should say, well, wasn't there supposed to be a vote to even begin
inquiry?
I've heard,
right. Right.
Which has not happened, right? So there's a question, a legal constitutional question. What goes first? Can she just set it up, put it in place on her own, or does Congress and the Judiciary Committee have to commence a formal inquiry and call for a resolution to begin the process? So it looks like the process has already begun. Now, at some point, the Judiciary Committee will actually submit a resolution calling for articles of impeachment. That will include one or whatever, again, the things that you and I discussed.
Right.
One article of impeachment could be extortion, right?
Right?
A second article of impeachment could be abuse of power, right? You can just imagine, right? The third one is, endangering national security, right? You can imagine the various articles of impeachment. And by the way, Paul, there's no reason why they can't resurface some of the Mueller findings,
right?
Some of the things that came out of that to say, look, here's a broad scope of what we're complaining about with this particular president, and we want to list all of them to enlarge the scope of what the impeachment could look like. The House then will vote on that, on those articles of impeachment. Again, it takes a majority of the House members, so it's very possible that President Trump, now again, Congresswoman Pelosi is saying, we're not going to rush the process, right? But we also have an election coming up, right? So this could take many months before the articles of impeachment, a resolution for calling for articles of impeachment, is in fact submitted to Congress. At that point, Congress would vote on it. And if it's approved, it will then move to the Senate, where the Senate will then conduct a formal trial. Now, that'll look like a legal proceeding, but it's not. It's a legal proceeding, again, within the Senate. Chief Justice Roberts will be the presiding judge. There'll be a few floor managers that will play the role of prosecutors. The president's attorney and attorneys will be present. And all the other senators will function as jurors. That's what it'll look like.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, Paul, at the end of this trial, and again, just to prove again that this isn't a classic legal proceeding, the Senate decides what witnesses can be presented, what evidence is permissible, right? They set their own rules. So
right.
You just said subjectivity. There's some more subjectivity. The Senate will decide what's the rules of how this trial will be conducted.
So standard rules of criminal procedure don't apply?
No, they set up their own rules.
Okay.
But again, it'll look like a trial, but it won't be a trial. And the best example of that is what we just said, that the senators will decide what witnesses they'll hear from, what kind of evidence is legitimately presented before this body. At the end of that process, the end of that trial, the decision to acquit or to convict the president of these high crimes and misdemeanors will be have to be passed by two-thirds of the Senate.
Which will never happen.
That's a lot. Which will never happen. Think about the number right now. Right now, the Republicans have a one-seat hold. That means that every single Democrat and 20-some-odd Republicans would have to vote to remove President Trump from office. So I think there is a strong possibility that there will be an impeachment of President Trump. I think there's very small likelihood that you will see him actually removed from office. And remember, we've never done that in this country.
Right.
Presidents Johnson and Clinton were impeached, but were acquitted by the Senate.
Right. Which, as I look in the totality of everything that you said, which is so fascinating, I look at it as a procedure that is almost a farce when you think about it, because you have the American people, taxpayer money, that's going to spend, yeah, and saying, I don't know, I'm overly frugal, but I'm thinking probably tens of millions in this process.
Absolutely.
Okay. So they're going to spend tens of millions of dollars, if we take this and market board this whole thing, right? A process that is highly subjective, is a non-legal process, is entirely motivated by politics, is... The incidences that are considered to be unacceptable are defined in the eyes of the members of the House. Then they've got to pull things together in order to vote to impeach, which they need two-thirds.
Right.
So it's highly, I mean, and it depends who you talk
to, right?
You
mean not to impeach, to remove from office.
Right, so, but you need two-thirds of the House to approve impeachment?
You know, you need a majority.
Oh, you need a majority. I stand corrected. So you need 51%.
That's why there's a much greater likelihood.
Exactly.
That impeachment. You see impeachments, but you don't actually see removals from
right.
office.
Right. So it's highly likely, after all the money that is spent, out of all the interruption, out of the fact that the House has spent so much time on this, we're legislating. We're not legislating anything, Thane. We're investigating. So
yes, and in fact, your point, I'm sorry to interrupt, but your point is you touched on another point. We're not legislating, which means that all the business of Congress will come to a halt anyway.
Right.
Nothing will be done but this.
And
so not only will we not be legislating, we'll just be doing this. Which is why, politically, Paul,
yes,
people are saying this is going to blow up in the face of Democrats.
Oh, there's no doubt, because, see, the other thing, too, Thane, that I look at is... You know, if I tell you the day he wins the election, Democrats are saying, we're going to impeach him. We're going to impeach him. The guy hadn't opened his mouth yet, and they were ready to impeach him then. I'm looking at this as an objective person, and I'm saying, you know, you kind of showed your cards there, right? But you see, that doesn't even matter. Because at the end of the day, it's like you so eloquently put this, you know, this is a political process. It's going to take its course because that's what it does. It's going to cost to American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. And at the end of the day, there's probably not a snowball's chance in hell that it's going to pass the Senate. So we're going to investigate. We're not going to legislate. The American people are not going to be served by getting things done they should. And then... it's going to blow up in the face. The president will probably use this against them during the campaign. I don't know, Thane. I'm shaking my head, but I have to tell you this, my dear friend. I know a lot more right now than I did 30 minutes ago, thanks to you.
I'm happy to help.
And on behalf of everyone here at Security Matters and everyone who listens, I really appreciate it. You are truly a national treasure, and I'm so happy that we work together. So.
That's very, very kind of you to say, Paul. Thank you so much.
Rosenbaum, and enjoy the holidays. I hope you had, I hope you had a blessed Rosh Hashanah. What a beautiful holiday.
I have a fast coming up. Yes, I did, but I have a fast coming up.
Yes, and you've got the most sacred of sacred holidays coming
That's
up.
That's quite right.
Yeah. Which
Thank
to
you
me
for
is such a
that,
it's so so beautiful. You know, that time of atonement. But the other part about Rosh Hashanah, I'll tell you real briefly, okay, and then we got to go.
Sure.
I was born on Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and my mom was in North Shore Hospital, and she's sitting next to, well, she's laying dead, right? She's in a chair in a room with this very nice lady, Jewish lady, and her husband walked over, and my mom told me the story. This big, handsome man comes over and shakes her hands and says that you were blessed because a boy, if a boy is born on Rosh Hashanah, I guess it's a good luck sign or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, that's what my mom told me, so well, I got to go with it.
Now we know why your listeners also received a blessing. That's how they got you, Paul. you're a Rosh Hashanah gift to them.
That's a good thing, right, Thane? That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Just saying, tell people. I just want you to know I'm a Rosh Hashanah gift to my listeners.
I'm going to lead with that, I'm telling you, from now on. Yeah. But Thane, thank you so very much, Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News Radio legal analyst, for being with us today. And blessed holiday. And God willing, I will speak to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up for the day. Stay with me.
What we see in this impeachment is a kangaroo court, and Chairman Schiff is acting like a malicious Captain Kangaroo.
The White House says it won't cooperate with the impeachment inquiry.
If the president thinks that he's going to prevent us from moving forward, he's sadly mistaken. We have ample evidence. It's shocking behavior of the president. It's illegal.
Now, back to Security Matters with Paul Violas.
Welcome back to Security Matters. I'm Paul Violas. And to finish up our show for today, I want to touch on a couple of things. To reiterate, and Thane brought up some really good stuff, but to reiterate, when we talk about impeachment, hopefully this has been an education for you. I know it is for me. And I always love being able to speak with people that are just obviously so much smarter than I am. And and Thane did a great job, I think, in breaking this down so that what we see on television now, at least for me, the chaos and the stupidity makes sense. I get it now. I get where it's going. The other part about this that I want to make sure we take up some time right now, not much, real quick as we close. There's been a lot of rhetoric about comments that were made on social media during an interview at another network about if the president is impeached, there will be civil war. I want to just put a little calming thought there. Number one, the likelihood of the president being impeached is one in a kajillion. And look up kajillion. It's a big number. The other part about that is we don't need to have any anxiety and angst over that because there is not going to be a civil war. Do we have a lot of division in this country? Yes. Is there a lot of disdain towards people based on what we look like and what we talk and how we speak and where we're from? Yes. I mean, there's no question that we need to make a lot of improvements here in this country. We know that. We talk about it. But we are not close to being concerned about a civil war. Do we absolutely need to be concerned about a lot of things and certain groups that are clearly violent? Yes. But with the law enforcement that we have in this country, with the military presence of our National Guard in each state, with the crisis response procedures that we train on and prepare for every day, with the intelligence network that we have in the United States, from cyber to boots on the ground, second to none. So all I say to you is, please, don't lose a second sleep over any comments about a civil war, because it's simply not going to happen. There is not going to creep up on us. And if there is something that's concerning, law enforcement in this country will collaborate, will take care of it. So don't let that bother you. And as far as this impeachment process, see it for what it is. And hopefully you got that today. I know I did. So on behalf of everybody here at Security Matters, and certainly on behalf of everyone at CBS News Radio, I want to thank you all for listening. We'll catch up with you next week. Be safe, be well, God bless.
Thanks for listening to Security Matters with Paul Violas. The podcast is produced by Seth Nyman and CBS News Radio. For more podcasts from CBS News, visit cbsaudio.com/podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.